In front of me, as I talk, is an arrangement of flowers and fruits and berries, bright-tinted leaves and half-dried yellowy-brown ferns and seed heads, so full of the colour of autumn that they seem to have brought indoors a sense of the whole season's richness. And beside me on the table is a book written in the second half of the last century, showing decorations in favour in 1865. It is open at a picture of a tall vase intended to stand on the floor. It's 5 feet high, and it has a bunch of ferns and flowers stuck in the top of it, which bear no relation at all to the size of the vase. This contrast between my autumn flowers and the old picture symbolizes for me the great change that has taken place in domestic taste over the years. Take this vase in the picture now. It isn't exactly ugly. You can seldom say that with flowers, but the lack of proportion, the absence of grace, and the feeling that there is no relationship between the size of the vase and the length of the stems arranged in it, all these nag at one. But my autumn berries, unlike the arrangement in the picture, are not just stuck in their vase. They flow from it in gentle lines, and the vase itself is chosen to suit the massiveness of its contents. I think it is important, if you're going to study flower arrangement, to begin by understanding how this change in taste has come about. When women began to take an increasingly active part in the decoration and arrangement of their rooms, they became more critical and more selective. All sorts of irrelevant objects went out in the early years of the century, and a greater sense of decorative harmony seemed to prevail. Clearly, then, the flowers had to be in harmony too, and could no longer be irrelevant objects. Any old vases arranged in any old way stuck about here and there. No longer would a woman of taste be satisfied with a vase, let us say, of carnations and ferns, unless, of course, it suited its background. On the other hand, she would never hesitate to use something as simple as a bunch of cow parsley, provided it looked right. In short, flowers had to be chosen and planned with intelligence and understanding. Many conventional ideas were set aside, and the women of today use flowers as an artist uses paint. In this talk, I shall offer a few suggestions which I hope will be of help. But in no sense are these intended as rules. Never forget that in arranging flowers, you have an opportunity to express your own sense of what is beautiful, and you should feel free and uninhibited in doing it. First, about the general principles of arrangement. People sometimes ask if there is any one method of procedure better than another. I don't really think so. Different arrangers have different methods. Some of them are inclined to state first the height and the width, and then to fill in an outline, and finally to fill in the center. Others like to start with a special point of interest and then to work round it. Of course, a great deal depends on the flowers you are using. And certain types of arrangement seem to require to have this one special point of interest. But it isn't essential, and it shouldn't be regarded as a rule. The first consideration in choosing an arrangement is suitability. There are moments, there are places, and for elaboration. But more often, it is simplicity and artlessness which please. You don't hang gingham curtains in a gilded salon, nor brocade in a country cottage. Let suitability be your watchword. Studied effects, apart from exceptional circumstances, are generally less pleasing than artless ones. It is quite possible to retain agreeable lines and good outlines without overworking and over-stylizing the flowers. Never mangle your flower material to make it conform to some geometric shape. Avoid overcrowding, and when in doubt, leave out. Now about the choice of vases.
Yes,
cut glass rose bowls and silver trumpet vases have had their day. Let them lie, though I am not saying they won't come back again. Today there is a wider choice than ever before. On the whole, I would choose simple classic shape and have nothing over ornamented. There are exceptions, of course, but over-elaboration, either in shape or in the finish of the vase, may detract from the general effect that you are aiming. If you keep in mind the whole picture that you're making, you won't go wrong. For example, suppose you pick marguerites and garden poppies and grasses. You will enjoy most arranging them in something as simple as a thin-lined basket, provided it's a nice shape and is really suitable, and not one of those ornamented gilded things. But if you picked arum lilies, then you wouldn't be satisfied with the basket at all. You might long for a marble earth. Next, proportion of the height of the flowers to the vase. There isn't any search rule that I do, but as a general guide, I would say that the topmost flower could be 1.5 times the height of the vase. Anyway, if you take that as a guide, you are not likely to get a squatty. Next, shape. A good outline pleases the eye, and a clumsy one fits. You may like to work within the confines of an imaginary triangle. That's not a bad guide if you've not had a good experience. But try not to stylize your flowers or to make them literally. Gentle flowing lines and curves are best suited to living flowers and flowers. You don't want to turn your flowers into a geometry lesson. And never mangle plant material to make it conform to the flower. We've all seen gladiators cut off at the ears to follow lines which they never take naturally. We've seen an L of tulips and a crescent moon of marigolds. We've even seen, heaven preserve us, a triangle of roses. Not one of these would, I think, a good idea. The flowers look strained and unnatural, and your joy in their essential beauty is diminished. Now about background. Flowers look their best against a plain background, by which I mean a surface uninterrupted by design. Look at a very busy wallpaper, and you will see what I mean. But then we can't always choose our background. And if you can't do that, then you must contrive something for yourself. This is not difficult. A mirror is admirable. So is the Eastern idea of hanging up, just as a map is hung up, a plain piece of fabric with a wide hem top and bottom, through which you can push a thin rod to make it hang well. Background is important with flowers about the house, and it's equally so when we come to flowers for the table. A polished table gives lovely reflections and is especially good for flowers with pale colours. Perhaps an ordinary white tablecloth is the most difficult of all backgrounds, but many people nowadays make cloths of unconventional materials. For meals out of doors or for kitchen lunches, I use a series of cloths of coloured hessian, finished at the edge with heavy cotton fringe. A dark brown one makes a lovely foil for daffodils and wallflowers in spring, and for outdoor chrysanthemums in autumn. And I have one in wine colour that is quite perfect for cornflowers, and a golden yellow for autumn.
To John Peel's festive 50s.
And then there is a cloth of navy blue linen,
dye-proof,
I may say, roughly embroidered all over with white heads of marguerite. It's quite coarsely embroidered and quickly done too, and it's perfect for a basket of marguerites and grasses. If I'm short of flowers, I often add a piece of white decorative china on either side of the centerpiece. Try a rough pair of pottery birds on either side of your central vase, or pieces of simple Staffordshire, or whatever you may have that suits the scheme in hand. When it comes to tablecloths of finer ware, I have one of Swiss muslin, lightly and transparently stenciled with ivy leaves, which is cool and pretty in summer, and washes, I may say, like a rag. With a little ingenuity, you can have a range of tablecloths on which to ring the changes, and you can have all this without any serious outlay.
If you do, cut
it is a general idea, by the way, that table flowers must be kept low. And though for everyday purposes this is practical, it needn't be a must. At one of the banquets given for the Queen in the week of her coronation, we used a full candelabra, and in the place of candles, we put posies of plants. This led us to have special bowls made to fit into candle holders, which would take both flowers and candles. This plan carries the flowers high on the table and makes a little go a long way. If you are faced with the problem of making an expensive table decoration at a time when flowers are very scarce, let me tell you of one useful plan that we often adopt. Cut a strip or strips of paper to the desired width and length, and lay them down the centre of the table. Arrange on this a pleasant bed of moss. Pick your flowers, snowdrops or primroses, or daisy, or crocuses, whatever small spring flowers you can get, and give them a night in water. Then arrange them in little bunches, each with an appropriate leaf or two, and set them, like a pattern of bouquet, in the mossy bed. For a special occasion, the flowers can just be set in the moss, and they will last long enough if they've had that good preliminary drink. But if you want them for every day, then I would make the arrangement on a narrow piece of wood or a tray, which can be lifted off the table if needed. And then I can seal in the bed of moss some very small vases to hold water. Before now, we have decorated a large number of tables for conference lunches in this way, and have been able to use simple wild and garden flowers in a way which is quite effective enough for an extensive decoration. This, I may say, is more pleasing and unusual than cut glass garbage and flowers set at intervals down the table. Next, let me turn to colour and lighting. This is a particularly personal matter, no rules here. Only one or two foot. Some flowers look well against her. Silken petal poppies or French willow herb look particularly lovely with the light shining through their translucent petals. Other arrangements can look quite wrong in such a position. A mixed group of garden flowers, or of flowers and fruit and berries in autumn, for instance, look confused if set against a window.
We protect our
arrangements such as these
the
need to have the light shining on them,
safety,
not through
fire safety and bicycle safety.
Suppose you want
others,
to create a strong note of colour,
will help
perhaps
you
to
and
echo the tones at some point in the background, maybe the
body
curtain.
Safety.
Or you may be copying
as
the colours of a picture.
This book with your child,
you will tone down
child
the strength
about,
of colours by the incidence of grief. And please do not think that this means that I think you should necessarily strip the flowers of their foliage. I only mean that you may find it desirable to reduce this in order to gain the full richness of the colour chosen. White or pale coloured flowers will create a highlight in a room, or a highlight within the group itself.
But rather to educate.
To realize this, you've only to study the flower paintings of the masters of the 18th or early 19th century. You will see how they will use a pale flower to create a highlight in a picture. Blue flowers sometimes look grey in artificial light, and in the dim light of a church, particularly so, and they must then be used with care. I remember once using mixed delphiniums in a big church. From a little way off, it looked as though there were gaps in the arrangement. But these were, in fact, merely flowers of a rather greyish blue, which seemed to have become obliterated. There is a very important point about mixed colours, or about mixed bunches of colours, which, by the way, always look pretty in simple bunches and simple bunches. If you arrange flowers in light sweeps of one colour, you tend to get a more pleasing effect than if you dot your colour about in newness. And in every mixed bunch, the eye is relieved if you can introduce a restful bird. This may be done by including one or two bold and shapely leaves, or even a flower of very definite form. And such as these are generally best introduced towards the base of the arrangement. There is an interesting fact about the colour of flowers. It may be because of the translucent nature of their petals and a consequent interplay of light, but whatever the reason, it does seem possible to combine colours in a way which would be unpleasing in other media. Take red, for example. You may take flowers and leaves of almost every known shade of red, scarlet, rose, vermilion, magenta, cramoisy, whatever you like, right up to the boldness of orange. And then putting them all together with courage, and I may tell you it is fatal to weaken half way, create a brilliant effect of richness, not at all shocking to the sensibility. In Chinese pictures, you sometimes see jewel-like effects created by the contrast of clear vermilion and pure magenta. And although to Western eyes this is not a usual combination, it can be remarkably beautiful if judiciously carried out with flowers. I remember one such combination in an arrangement of pale magenta azalea and clear vermilion japonica, that shrub which we now have to call kenomeles. It was very effective. This must be a big enough mesh so that when it is crumpled up, not folded but crumpled, the apertures will be big enough to take the stems. Many people start by choosing a netting of too fine a mesh, so that in the end, when they've got it already in their vases, they find that it is difficult to get the stems through the different layers. And there must be several layers for the stems to pass through in order to keep them exactly where they are wanted. If your stems are big and tall, then the depth of the tangled wire netting to allow the stems of five layers. With this, you can be pretty sure of getting a secure hold. 2-inch mesh is about right. Take care that your tangled netting does not slip about in the vase or you'll have trouble. Because as soon as you have the flowers around, they are short. So the first thing is to get your netting fixed so firmly it won't fall. One simple one is to pull out 3 or 4 ears as it falls, and bend these over the rim of the vase. This is quite easy with a tool, and the method is quite good for most bows. But sometimes you get a bow that is a little difficult in shape. Then net it into a dome shape or a pyramid, so that part of it rises above the rim. Then it would take a piece of string or raffia and tie right over vase and wire, just as you tie up a car. You'll find your wire will stay in place. When the flowers are arranged, you can cut away the string, or it may not show at all. It sometimes happens that you are using a clear glass vase and need also wire netting to keep your flowers in position. If this is allowed to reach far down the vase, it will be seen through the glass and be done. If you crumple up a small tangle and fix it by the ears of wire over the rim of the vase, you can then use it to support the plants and an overhanging leaf the flower will hide it completely from view. For certain uses, there are the little pointer, which originated in Japan. They look rather like instruments of fruit, but they are very useful in stems, particularly for arranging these in shallow bowls when you want to see a good expanse of stem. People don't always remember how beautiful the stems of sunflowers can be. Tulips, for example, have stems of architectural beauty. If you make very heavy tulips with a large number of them to arrange, you can sometimes use a combination of architectural beauty, which gives you tremendous strength and support. And you won't then have any trouble even with heavy ones or with leaves. At about all plants of course, there is one. And really, I think this time I must go to the world. One room. The holder must be quite hidden from you. After all, if you painted a picture and were about to hang it, you wouldn't want to find it.
One morning he awoke.
Now I think I must digress briefly for a moment to tell you that I am sometimes asked whether one should wire flowers for decoration. My reply is no, not in any circumstance. The wiring of flowers belongs to floristry, and that is where it should stay. Floristry is primarily concerned with flowers for the adornment of the person, such things as bouquets and sprays and headdresses. For such purposes, wiring is essential.
Wake up!
If the proper shape is to be kept, and if the flowers are to stand up, what is required? But for flowers in vases, wiring is not only unnecessary, it is a great mistake.
We were afraid to touch it.
Grow
the sheets were hot, dead, prison.
The most graceful life. You take all their grace away.
And if he was beside me.
Coming back to the one, it is not only desirable to keep this out of sight, but sometimes you want to hide the stems as well. Though, as I told you earlier, there are some cases where stems are
too.
If you're taking a mixed garden with perhaps a certain amount of foliage down the stem, and if you arrange stems in a cabin
plant,
you always just get a mixed and pure stem and cut the leaves. Let it put in
looks.
I would choose carefully for clean and decorative
rooms
with a small magic hat. And for me, I choose a one that is high and clean. And need I say, when you are pure, you can remove any rooms that are likely to come below the water. Making pictures with living plants if they're going to die almost as soon as you finish putting them together. Nowadays, we use so many more varieties of flowers and leaves than we used to. And we use things too which were once considered short-lived. But fortunately, we have increased our knowledge of how to help flowers to last. And that really has had the effect of extending the palette, as it were, of our flower material enormously. Because with this better comprehension, we have been able to draw in a much wider range of material.
Forget your name.
I can remember the days when as children we brought in such wild flowers as bluebells and cow parsley and wild apple blossoms, and we just accepted regretfully the fact that the beast will probably be dead by next morning. We knew nothing about brushing the stems, using hot water, or boiling the tips of the stems. And indeed, it is only within the last few years that we have learned that this is a treatment.
We're breaking through
many things that we once thought to be treatment. for our purpose. But it's worth beginning at the very beginning. And I'm going to assume that you are either picking your flowers from the garden or in the countryside. Because some of the same rules, if you like to call them there, apply also to flowers bought in the shops. Before you start picking, have ready a deep pail of tepid water. Pick your flowers some hours, and preferably overnight, before arranging. This will give them time to drink up the water and make it possible for them to stand the transition from the cool, moist air of the garden to the drier atmosphere of the brain. Don't pick too many at a time, and don't pick a few, and then put them down on the ground while you go off in search of others, so that they are exposed unnecessarily to the sun and air. This is a certain way to dry them out. Never any rain. As soon as you bring them in, put them into your pail of water before doing anything at all.
In the labyrinth of streams beneath,
then by stream,
the quiet unearthly presence of gentle hill people in the gentle hills around. Reptiles abounding, fossils, caves.
These are used in places where a good many are.
Cool air heights!
Certain stems are healthy if they are split with a knife at the tip for half an inch to about an inch. Bearing in mind how much water can have, it's got to carry up enough moisture for the flowers and leaves to live. So if it's very heavy for the flowers and leaves, it has sometimes got more to do.
That's car why locked in against morning.
So leave the tent anything you're not going to want. Superfluous leaves, damaged flowers or buns,
anything else you want. Dust glide under the beds of lawful couples, wound in sheets and daughters.
You take away for
smug with.
As each stem is prepared, it is put back into the pail of water. There are some flowers which are more difficult to keep going than others. For example, wild willow herb and cowpunsley.
There's been a slaughter here.
And some of the euphorbias and garden lilac. And particularly the lenten hellebores.
Don't start to speak or look around. Your gloves and fan are on the ground. You're getting out of time.
This brings me to the subject of hot water, and also of poison. Hot water is a wonderful reviver of wilted flowers, and it's also a help for certain freshly cut flowers. The degree of hotness is determined by the nature of the flower. Tepid water is generally suitable. Warm water, as hot as you would use to wash your hands, is suitable for sturdy stemmed flowers. And remember that really hot water will spoil any leaves there may be on the stem. So that you must, for example, put roses with leafy stems in the water. Because if you do, the leaves will come out brown and spoil. But you can revive your roses by putting the ends of the stem below the leaf into quite stinging
house upon the hill.
The lenten hellebores, which I mentioned just now, are really different, and they are treated in an even more aggressive
way.
The extreme tips of the
stem,
do remember, I mean extreme, are dipped into a pan of actually boiling water there for a few seconds. But of course, the head of the flowers must be a piece of cloth or of paper wrapped lightly round. After this boiling process has been carried out, the flowers are then put back into their bowl of deep tepid water and left overnight. Similar treatment for the last inch or
two of the sun, nothing left to do but to run.
You must take away all those thoughts burning as they walk in, and they really do seem to exhaust the
country.
There are certain flowers, the theme on each of the curtains are fully and I think garden the first flower that is important in this country in the winter from the country. Yes, strictly no. Just long stems with the flower is the these are the this is your into your shoes and find your child with you. Not everybody will. So do take care to fill your vase up to the top after you have read from the Phoenix. After that, I should fill up each vase. Personally, I use tepid water and even quite hot water. In fact, I generally fill my own vases with warm water. Last-minute adjustments, because something of this kind has happened immediately before a dinner party. Don't empty your vases of water completely and fill them up afresh each day, thinking you are doing something the flowers will enjoy. The curious thing is that they seem to like still water at the temperature of the room. In any case, if you really arrange your flowers well, it's a great pity to upset them. And they certainly don't like overhandling and the consequent bruising and disarranging. I think my time is up. I hope what I've said will be of some help. If you can't remember all of it, hang on to three things. First, simplicity. Secondly, see that the arrangement is an expression of your own sense of beauty, and that you are not trying to compromise with convention. And thirdly, that you understand how to look after the flowers themselves. But before we part, look over my shoulder in imagination once more at my autumn group still glowing in front of me. It is full of the richness of the fall of the year. There are fruits and flowers and berries and leaves, all combined just as they are in many a cottage garden. There is something particularly pleasing when you can echo in your flower arrangement the outdoor scene, the youngness and tenderness of spring, the flagrant lavishness of summer, the strong richness of autumn, and, strangely enough, also the sense of the sparseness of winter. Even the strength and austerity of a leafless branch, used properly with a few flowers, especially those which belong to the season, can give as much pleasure as the gayest of summer bunches. So I come back to the thought with which I started. The time has passed when vases were things to put flowers in, or when flowers were just things to stick in vases. The flower arrangement in my room here at Winkfield reminds me how right Emerson was when he said, "Flowers are a proud assertion that a ray of beauty outvalues all the utilities of man."
Christmas Day, the bumper book of insults. Wittgenstein, a life. Young Ludwig, 1889 to 1921. What a way to go. Some of the strangest deaths on record. A fountain pen. Two bars of Toblerone. Some walnuts, a bookcase.
On it had a little brown ribbon through the...
Never mind about the brown ribbon. You then took the seal to Bristol in a stagecoach, and upon arrival, promptly threw her over a cliff.
Toast, marmalade and coffee were consumed for breakfast, and the Christmas meal will be served at around 2 p.m. The table has been put in the front room with a white tablecloth over it. His tremendous bouts of drinking had wrecked his health. He was thin as a rail and had a cough. He thought of Cynthia now in the lonely and hostile town, and he became afraid. He thought he had tuberculosis and that he was going to die. So alone and lost again, having found neither order nor establishment in the world, and with the earth cut away from his feet, Oliver resumed his aimless drift along the continent. He turned westwards towards the great fortress of the hills, knowing that behind him his evil fame would not be known. I'm looking outside the window through a piece of purple cellophane. It's pouring with rain.
No one what to do and what to say. Try to be good at everything you do, but sometimes bad things happen to you.
It's the way you feel and don't let go.
Don't keep secrets that you know are bad. Don't keep secrets if they make you sad.
Then you can go back and color the pictures. Are you ready,
Ken? Remember,
not supposed to drive a Google, I don't know.
Yes, my puppy
wants to return something that she borrowed from your mother.
Jonathan, Mum and Dad seemed pleased with the present.
Mi posso cormi ferni sto superman ots mandola lis Cassandras?
Mum with the washing up. It's now lying
on
the
table,
waiting to be put away.
Right, second question.
Oriz
Manos! How do you know my surname is Orange? This is because I'm a kid very feeling.
The Bentley class bank, probably the most famous range of locomotives designed by and for the South African way.
Boxing Day, I'm sorry, but there appears to be a lot of technical problems with this recording.
White sauce with mustard for those who do, white sauce without for those who don't.
Not surprisingly,
I'm talking about the power of love now.
For lunch today, I spent the morning reading.
I'm going to tell you what love can do.
There are a lot of cars parked along the avenue.
You know when they say love makes the world go round.
They're attending the races at Kempton Park.
Love can make you or break you. Can make you laugh. It can make you cry. Make you happy, can make you sad. Or if you hung out real bad, in a case of jealousy, love can make you mad. Everybody's got his own way. Everybody's got his way of doing a thing. I wish I'd attempt to do it too. I don't know what he was thinking about, but it's hot. Right? It's a because it shows you what the power of love can do. And I shall attempt to do it my way, my own interpretation of it. Like I say, everybody got his own thing. And I'm gonna bring it on down to Soulsville. I want you to bow along with me for a few minutes while I set it up.
Cream, Madame.
Now I want your imagination. I want you to travel.
Oh,
come on. This young man
raised
in the hills of Tennessee.
When he reached
And he fell in love when he got out.
This young girl,
she was out of sight. She was bad. And they started dating.
Che sia iera puologira solistivi fosses macus
they were happily married
fosses fores na picro
frinomo
che matus di toverno me
o tovernia the power of love was upon him. But you see, girls, I don't mean to come down on you. But this man loved this woman so.
You know,
this love is blind. He could see no wrong. No. He worked every day. And sometimes he flew over to double. And she was bragging about her good thing that she's got. She tipped out of
her.
See, anybody gonna believe what you tell him, no way. Oh boy, I got sick. And he had to come home. I don't have to tell you what he found. Oh, it hurt him so bad. He said, baby, mama,
o despinarra, o esis foresteon, se bastes erinies, pu epiblepete tus adicos cosomenus, και εκείνους που γρυφά τα κρεμάτια των κλέβουν.
Μέλατε,
βοηθάτε,
εκδικήσετε
του πατέρα μου τον πόνο και σε μένα τα δάχτυα.
He said, Mama, I can't take it, I got to leave you. I'm gonna leave you.
Γιατί πια δεν μπορώ να υποφέρω μονάχη.
And he started out the door. And when he reached the driveway, you understand? He went in that bag just like my man Tyrone Davis. He said, Oh, mama, can I change?
Oh.
You see, the power of love was upon him. And he came back. Oh, yes, he did. When she tried to straighten up, she said she was going to straighten up. She got a little job to help him out with the wheels, too. That was just a shame. Because he found it again and again. And seven times he left this woman. And seven times he came back. Oh, but you know, the heart can take so much. That's right. You can kick a dog around for so long, and he'll get tired. He'll turn. And he had taken all that he could stand. And the eighth time that this went down, he said, Mama, I got to go. With tears in his eyes, he said, I'm going to leave you, baby. He said, I ain't coming back. He said, I'm leaving my heart right here. But I got to go. You see, because this man can't take me.
Then all stories
you can leave it.
There are 10 steps leading up to the door, which is number 30.
You got it in 1960.
The second floor window, I see a Chinese lantern behind the rather sparse Christmas tree. There's about 5 white lights,
three times
of gold decorations. Hung on the branches. So there's a rather disheveled yucca plant near the end of a black car. He's got 2 blue plastic bags of waste tied with orange twine.
One, and he's going down the highway.
Olive green plastic dustbin. And the others
slide
into a black plastic dustbin. I've just turned into Montague Road. There's more peculiar shaped distinctive buildings. The one I'm looking at the moment is number 26. There's an octagonal greenhouse attached.
You can barely see the sand.
Garage, which is sunk in the night. All the rooms are in darkness.
And these very words came into his
mind. It was Selvina, if you're a man, I saw him with you.
By the time I get to Phoenix, she'll be right. Oh, and she'll find. I left hanging on the door.
All'ogar sti sedu la stesi per noi su padera mu mesa da
stia
e ci metti in terra sti a fi foresta. Dolfi a steco prostati a
trapre.
A colle si piomi si metti.
Cause I've left that girl so many times. Oh, by the time
tu anni ho tutti i freddi,
buono
se corri, buttami un attimo anticristezzano dopo io ti stai
fermo,
o patata,
compiere
anche meno, ma si ti do i, come provo san, me casano.
I would really leave. But time after time after time after time and time again, I tried to tell her so. But she was an unbeliever. I would really go. Oh no.
FM